Quest for Gold. We're now 3 weeks away from the opening ceremonies in Beijing, and despite the surge in Omicron cases worldwide, we're still full steam ahead for the Winter Olympics. The USA men's hockey team was announced Thursday. The team no longer includes NHL players after the league pulled out of the games last month. The roster features 15 American college players, 8 who play hockey in Europe, and 2 from the AHL. None of them have any previous Olympic experience. Last week, Team USA named its biathlon team, long track speed skating team, and figure skating team. Speed skater Emery Lehman, who we spoke with in episode 4, made his second Olympic team. Very cool story out of the speed skating trials. U.S. speed skating star Brittany Bowe, who already qualified for the 1,000 and 1,500 meter competitions, gave up her spot in the 500 meter to her teammate Aaron Jackson, who stumbled and finished third in the trials. Jackson had dominated the World Cup circuit, but it was the trials that ultimately determined the U.S. spot. It'll be her second Olympics. Figure skater Jason Brown, who we spoke with in episode 6, also punched his ticket to Beijing. Not a surprise, Nathan Chen made the men's figure skating team. He looks like a medal favorite at this point. Mariah Bell, at the age of 25, becomes the U.S.'s oldest female champion. This will be her first Olympics. Alexa Kinnearum and Brandon Fraser are headed to Beijing for pair skating. For Alexa, this is her second time in the Olympics. In 2018, she was with her husband, who has since retired. This will be Fraser's first Olympic Games. He actually tested positive for COVID at the U.S. Championships in Nashville, and they couldn't compete, but were successful in petitioning U.S. figure skating based on their body of work up to that point. American snowboarding legend Shaun White appears on the verge of locking up his fifth Olympic bid. We won't know officially until the team is announced January 21st. He has 4 Olympic golds and has indicated these games will be his last. The Omicron virus has forced China to put some areas under lockdown, impacting about 20 million residents. They call it a zero COVID policy. That being said, there does not appear to be any change in plan when it comes to hosting the games in Beijing. Things are getting tight for the athletes looking to secure those final Olympic spots. One of them is Casey Larson. The 2018 Olympic ski jumper from Barrington, Illinois, has a strong body of work to this point, but he did not grab a qualifying bid at the U.S. trials on Christmas Day. He's got another competition in Europe this weekend. He's hoping his strong showing there will lock in that second spot, and he can join teammate and fellow Illinois native Kevin Bickner in Beijing. By the way, we spoke with Kevin in episode 5. In our athlete spotlight, we talked to Casey, who's mentally preparing for China, but does need to take care of some business first.
So what was that experience like in 2018? What was it like, the competition itself? What was Olympic Village like? What was it like to be part of, all of the ceremonies?
Thinking back now, I'm like, I can't believe I was around that many people when I had to be an athlete. Like, I can't believe I was meeting new people just in the mess hall. Cause obviously, I haven't talked to any athletes from Tokyo, but I'm assuming, especially Beijing, it's going to be completely different. But yeah, it was super cool. I definitely, didn't have a lot of pressure on my shoulders to go win a medal. I was pretty young. Just kind of set my foot in the water in terms of at that high level of the sport. So it was really cool just to experience, I was told to go experience it, make sure you go watch other athletes, go watch other sports, and just have a good time at the Olympics and kind of gain a respect for that big of an event. And I definitely did that. I actually jumped probably above my means at that point. I was lucky enough to be on that fourth member on that, 4-man team, just kind of not to fill a spot, but to, I was, because my other teammates qualified that fourth spot for me, I was able to go. So just kind of being there and enjoying it and having fun was well had, but now kind of looking forward to, a month from now, it's a little bit different of a game. It's going to be a lot more serious just with COVID, especially, we're not going to be able to go to, other sports or really, expand outside of our bubble. So
are you able to kind of drink all that in? Cause this is going to be completely different. I mean, the fan experience is going to be different. You're going to be in, they haven't said the word bubble yet. I think it's called a closed ring or something like that. But you are going to, get wheels down, compete, and you're probably going to have to get the heck out of there. I don't know what the scheduling is like at this point, but, there's not going to be a lot of time to rub elbows with the hockey players and the curlers and anything like that.
Yeah, it is a little bit of a bummer, but, that's already our plan. I think kind of talking to people and figuring things out is, it just doesn't make sense for us in terms of, because we're already inside of that window of, if you test positive, you're going to have a hard time getting into China. So I actually kind of planned it out okay, I think, where I actually got my booster 2 days ago. Okay. I went a really long time without getting boosted because I kind of came to Europe right when the CDC opened it up to everybody. And then I've been competing and haven't wanted to feel like, crap for a day or something like that. And I've been, pretty well quarantined when we're competing. I'm not going out and going to bars or anything like that. So I wasn't too scared. And then, got my booster yesterday. So hopefully that'll kind of, take full effect and into that, keep me safe through Beijing is the big idea. But obviously crazy things can happen. But if you test positive now, it's not looking great. So
are you in kind of like an isolation situation? I mean, are you basically competing and then quarantining?
Yeah, so we have one more competition this next weekend. I actually don't have a technically, and could be more than technically, don't have a spot yet for the Olympics. So I'm still fighting for one more week for that, make sure that spot is going to be mine. So we're going to compete. And then after that team is named, after we figure all that out, then whoever's not on that Beijing team will be, will quarantine, pretty much just probably go to, go somewhere. We'll have a nice camp. We talked about going on a little physical camp and then jumping for a little bit, right before Beijing, missing a couple competitions on the World Cup circuit, just to make sure we don't test positive and then head over.
I know you guys are drug tested constantly, or at least there's always the threat looming that you'll be drug tested at any moment. I mean, are they doing that with COVID testing as well? Are they just grabbing you and testing you, or is it only if you experience symptoms, or maybe you're just doing it randomly?
No. So it's depending on the country. It's all like country based. So I know with, pretty much Germany, you have to get tested to go in there and show a test. So we'll get tested the day before we leave, heading to Germany. Like, I'm going to Germany this weekend, so I'll get tested on Thursday, drive there on Friday, show them the tests, show them that we're boosted, show them that we're vaccinated, and then should be able to compete totally fine. And if you're obviously, it's definitely better to test positive in Slovenia where we live, because then you can at least quarantine at home. But no, they're not really testing too much once you get to the competition.
Tell me about these last 4 years, because it looks like you had an injury. We obviously dealt with COVID. I mean, this is probably a much different cycle than you went through in 2018. Obviously, you're a little older, a little more experienced, but I mean, you've definitely had some challenges.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the kind of right after the Olympics, it was always weird. I mean, what they talk about was like the post-Olympic blues and like kind of struggling. And it's having that happen at like such a young age, where I was like, like when you're a kid, you think about going to the Olympics, you're like, oh, I'm going to go to the Olympics. I'm going to deal with this and it's going to be sweet. I did it. Like, I accomplished in those first 2 years of me being at a high level, 2017, 2018, I like did everything I ever wanted to do as a kid. So I definitely struggled to kind of get back in and find the love for the sport again. And it kind of took me the whole summer, I'd say, after the Olympics. But then that winter, so 2018, 2019 winter, actually ended up being pretty successful, kind of in the second half. Did pretty well at World Championships, was, snuck into the top 30 there, qualified for every event, had some fun ski flying later in the year. And then I really struggled just with my jumping, just with like, not even fitness, just sometimes technique can take a turn, go into a little bit of a slump. That 2019, 2020 year, where I actually didn't really get affected by COVID at the competition in those early months. I was kind of already back home, actually ready to go back out to Europe, but then, we shut down the borders and everything. And then last year was pretty good. Scored some World Cup points, kind of got an Olympic spot, for the United States in that sense. My name wasn't attached to it, but looking forward, this year has been the summer was great. The start of the winter was a little rocky, but my kind of whole plan was to kind of peak and be on the come up for Beijing, which worked a little too well. We're definitely starting to figure things out. Body feels good. Mind feels good. The results are getting there. I just wish they were getting there a little bit quicker. I definitely could have had some better weekends sprinkled in there, but can't change the past, so you just got to kind of keep looking forward. But yeah, that injury, that was torn shoulder labrum during COVID, so I wasn't even really jumping a whole lot. Nobody was jumping in the world a whole lot that way. So it was actually kind of nice, not nice to tear your labrum and not be able to use your left arm for a while. But for the most part, I just kind of used it as a positive and got my mind right, took a little bit of a time off and then kind of came back pretty strong, which was...
You said you're kind of in a ramp up cycle right now. I mean, the way your sport is, you jump. What is it, just like what your expectation is now compared to what it was a few months ago or a couple of years ago? Or, you know, is there something more physical to how you're ramping up?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. I think what we find in especially like, I just made sure I pretty much what I mean when I say that is I really tried not to like get burnt out in the summer. Like I really made sure I was home a lot because we spent a lot of time in Europe. I mean, you'll find that we're spending 10, 11 months in Europe. I probably spent probably split 50-50. It'll kind of be 6 months, 6 months at the end of this year, probably. Where I'd actually spend a lot of time back in Park City is where I live now. Just kind of making sure that I recoup. I train really well there. Like, I, you know, there's nothing, you know, I can jump there. I can work out in the gym there. It's the same as Slovenia in that sense. So, and I have my coaches, but being home and, you know, being with my friends there is like, you know, offers a little bit different perspective on the sport. And I think that being home for me is really good. I think everybody likes being home, but I definitely found myself spending a little bit more time at home. I did my job over here in the summer. I came over here for a couple months, cranked out some really good competitions in Kazakhstan and Russia, where I, again, like got some really solid points for an Olympic spot. And then I was the only American to kind of be able to secure that many points and kind of get that going. And then I kind of immediately, when I did my job, I came back home to train and get ready. And then, boom, came over here in November, like mentally pretty ready to go. And I think it's kind of served me well just because I'm, you know, not wanting to be home. I really want to be here and be jumping and kind of keeping it going, which is sometimes different than other years.
It seems mentally as though you're preparing for Beijing, as though you're going. Obviously, you have not formally, you know, punched your bid yet, whereas Kevin has. I'm sure there are positives and negatives to both. On one hand, you're very hungry, obviously, at this point, whereas, you know, he can kind of sit back and relax a little bit more. Do you see that as an advantage, a disadvantage? I'm sure you'd rather have it in your back pocket. But on the other hand, too, mentally, I'm sure that it's helping you, you know, prepare for the next thing and realize these are the steps I have to take.
Totally. And I think, yeah, I think there's definitely, it's a double-edged sword at that sense too, because like you always want to be hungry. You always want to attack it. And I think for me right now, it's like, it's not desperation mode, but it's like, you know, you got to get your, cause I had my chances, you know, I can't complain about the amount of chances I got. I had, you know, all of right after New Year's, I had, you know, Four Hills tournament to kind of show what I was worth. And I, you know, I jumped really well. I was kind of the top American overall, but not good enough to like really kind of set in stone that I'm going, and to not have one more weekend to kind of prove that. So it's interesting. It's definitely not where I wanted to be, you know, at the end of the day, but I do have to prepare like I'm going. I'll deal with that when it comes to it. And, you know, in the back of my mind, I'm very aware, you know, you have a plan if you don't go to Beijing, and mentally I'm okay with it. It's not going to end my career. You know, I'm still, you know, 23 years old. So I'm very okay. If Beijing doesn't come into my, you know, doesn't end up happening for me, it's not the end of anything. But yeah, you know, I gotta prepare like I'm going for sure.
So are you trying to hit a score? Are you trying to impress the U.S. team? Are you, what is it that you are trying to accomplish now to get that?
We're pretty much just trying to impress, because it's discretion. I mean, they want to bring who is going to give them the best chance for a medal. So pretty much it is just kind of like, you know, there's something to kind of being at the top of your team. But at the same time, the rest of my team isn't, you know, going to win a gold medal. Like, you're kind of trying to prove that, hey, like, I'm not only maybe the top one on my team, but I'm also crushing everybody else in the world. You know, you want to be ahead of the Austrians, you want to be ahead of the Norwegians and the, you know, the Polish guys. So that's what you have to prove at a competition, especially one like this, where you're the time's ticking and you just want to prove, you know, kind of cement the fact that hey, I deserve that spot.
Where are we at as Americans in the sport of ski jumping right now? You know, obviously you listed off those European countries, and we don't huddle around the television and watch ski jumping like we do football or basketball or baseball here in the States. I know that there's some new venues in Lake Placid that you know, could propel the sport a little bit further. Where are we at right now as a state of ski jumping in the United States?
On the world stage, we're definitely considered it's funny because we're considered a small country. You know, we're considered, we don't have the funding. We don't have some of the other stuff some of those other countries have. So it's always interesting when you kind of like are talking to a friend And they, you know, they're used to seeing, even at the Olympic sports, we are just like at the top of the medalist, at the top of this, but we're not at the top of the medalist for every sport, you know, and ski jumping is one of the sports where we're, me and my teammates, we're struggling to, or not struggling, but we're, you know, trying to get to that point. Obviously, you know, it's all of our goals. We know what we're capable of. We want to get there, but we're not there yet. We're all young. You know, Kevin's the oldest one at 25. And then I'm next up in line. So, like, it's a young team. In theory, we've got a lot of years left, even the old guys. So it's like, we know we can get there, but we do need, at the end of the day, it's like, it's tough to do with as little funding as we have. But that's not my job to worry about. My job is to take what I got and go compete with it. So, but yeah, sometimes you do wish that you had the German budget or the Austrian budget, and maybe things would be a little different, but it could also be completely different in the wrong way, you know, because some of those, you know, when you have that many jumpers like the Austrians do, you know, they wean them out early. You know, who knows if Case Larson from Barrington, Illinois would have like actually risen the ranks, which I can only thank like the small country for doing, right? Like our small coaches or, you know, small clubs that bring us up and love the sport and just love being there and at the competitions. Like, I mean, if anybody listening has been in our ski club, you know how sick it is. Like, you know that somehow this weird sport draws like 5,000 people to the competitions. So that's kind of why, like, that's why I do it. That's why I remember like having so much fun and being able to go home and jump at the Nordic Ski Club is probably the coolest part about it.
It would seem, I mean, once you get to this high level, every sport is expensive, but is it a pretty pricey sport? I assume that traveling is a big part of, you know, what costs money on your end. I mean, do you go out and get sponsorships? Are you able to self-fund? Do you need to have a job on the side? How do you maintain through all of this?
A little bit of everything. Definitely got a job on the side. I have a job in Park City. But then other than that, I mean, it's definitely part-time, right? Like I'm only home X amount of days. And then those days that I am home training, you know, 7 days a week. So it's, you definitely got to find time for making money. It's definitely tough to self-fund. I don't find a ton of success in being able to like find sponsorships, especially US-based, because they don't know what the sport is. They don't really kind of have that understanding. So for the most part, it's just kind of trying to scrape together what you can. It's amazing what, you know, people can do and what USA Nordic's able to do for us. So we make it work, obviously. I'm definitely not making any money yet. Maybe someday. I mean, you can definitely draw some big European sponsors. I mean, we got athletes with Red Bull helmets, with you know, Milka helmet. We got the big brands that are interested in the sport, because I mean, it is massive. We will, during, you know, before COVID, we were filling up 40,000-50,000 people stadiums. Like Soldier Field was a ski jump, and you know, in Austria and Germany. So it's really cool how big the sport is. I mean, it is the number one most watched Olympic winter sport.
Is there prize money then for the sports when you compete in them?
In the winter, top 30 make money on World Cup. So your winner's making 10 grand just in prize money. And then we'll have a couple like big like tournaments throughout the year where it's like a 4-day, 5-day event where you travel from different places. Like I just got done with the Four Hills tournament, which is 2 in Germany, 2 in Austria, like over New Year's break. And, you know, if you win that, it's like a 10,000 each win. And then it's like a 100,000 bonus, and then the winner gets 10,000, but then it just goes down in a couple hundred increments all the way down to the 30th place makes 100 Swiss francs.
Do you have any pre-jump rituals? I mean, are you a guy who likes to get amped up, throw the headphones on, blast some music? Do you like to chill out and meditate beforehand? How do you kind of approach competitions mentally?
I do a little bit of everything. I'll put the headphones on, but I find if I put the headphones on and like really dial in, like no talking to anybody, no nothing, it gets bad. Like I get too hyper focused, kind of overthink it too much. So for the most part, we're all such good friends too, where I can usually pop the headphones off, have a normal light conversation about somebody's girlfriend or what we had for dinner the last night. So for the most part, yeah, my warm-up run, my 10-minute, 15-minute warm-up run, I'll have some headphones on, but then after that you're just trying to keep it light and easy, because what we do is tough. And you know, it's like golf where you got to be the right amount of focused and relaxed to kind of hit that jump perfectly. So you're just trying to find the best way to get into that mode. And I like to keep things as light as possible, because I know as soon as I get on that ski jump, I'm going to be dialed in pretty much no matter what.
Do you think much in that very short period of time, or is it just all allowing your body to just react to, you know, whatever that moment is? I mean, have you kind of mentally already made these jumps, and so it's just a matter of executing it, or are you thinking to yourself on your way down, I need to do this, and this?
Totally. I don't think much to begin with. I think I'm pretty bad at that whole part, but for the most part, no. I mean, this sport is so much a visualization. Like, in reality, like they say, like, you can go through a million jumps in your brain at night. So if you do that, you've kind of definitely get a really good idea for what you want to do on the ski jump the next day. So, you'd want to think as little as possible up there. You want to be focused. You know, some people think it's scary. Some people think it's dangerous, but for the most part, you're just focused on what you need to do. You know, in training, you're trying to listen to your coach. So at a competition, I'm usually just trying to listen to my coach. I'm not focused on going 180 meters. I'm just focused on maybe keeping my chest down. And if I do that, I'll know I'm going to go 140 meters. It's going to be all good.
At what moment do you know this was a good jump, this was a bad jump? I mean, is it immediate, or, you know, does it take to the time you land when you know this was a good jump?
Well, after I open my eyes, finally, no, I'm kidding. I usually pretty quickly, you know, kind of like, you know, you get in that, you have that long in run where you get into your in run position. And for me, I'm always tweaking my in run. That's kind of been the big season thing for me, is I'm really trying to find some consistency in my in run, so I know kind of how to set it each time, which comes and goes. That consistency is tough to hold on to, so you're always trying to find different feelings and find different things. So if I set my in run right, the only other thing I got to do is just kind of be on time, like just push down normally on that takeoff and hit it right. And once you get into the air and feel your skis, you know if you're going far, you're going short. So pretty much immediately. And then the whole thing in the air is just like, you see so many, that's why it's cool watching ski jumping, is you have all these different athletes who look different in the air, but look kind of similar everywhere else. And that's the one part of the sport where everybody finds their own way to like go far and fly. Like Kevin and I grew up with the same coach, jumping the same hill our entire lives. And we look completely different. We've both found like completely different ways of getting our skis flat and like, you know, accelerating and going far. So that part's really interesting to me. And that's kind of why I love the sport, is like we all have our own feelings that we try and search for.
One thing that I really like to ask all the athletes is the logistics of your equipment. Is it with you at all times? Do you ship it around? Like how do you get from place to place with your equipment, and how much do you bring?
So the really nice thing about being located in pretty much Central Europe, like Slovenia, is you are max 8 hours away from pretty much everywhere. So we drive most places to most competitions. The only times we'll fly are if we're going back home, we're going to Scandinavia, or we're going to anywhere pretty much Romania on. So we'll go to Romania, we'll go to Russia, we'll go to Kazakhstan, go to Japan. So we'll fly all those places. But if it's closer than that, we're probably driving. I would just hop in the van, and those skis slide on the floor of the van. Some vans have like a big, big rack up top, but our skis are 200, and some of us have like 260-centimeter skis. So it's like almost, it's like 6.5 feet long, 6-7 feet long. So they're big boys. Mine are like 250-centimeters long.
You just have one set, or do you have multiple sets in case?
Well, multiple sets. So if we're driving, we're not really worried too much about space. We're all, if we can, if it makes sense in baggage, I'll bring two pair. But yeah, if we're flying, we just have really big ski bags, and that's it. Like, that's our only crazy amount of equipment. We'll have a ski and boot bag, and then we'll have just regular duffel. We are like, I've never brought more than two pair of skis to a competition. All the pair I love that I know is my butter pair, and then I'll have a pair that's like, if conditions are crazy, usually I have like a tailwind pair that are really soft, or just a backup pair in case something happens. But that's it. There's not much to it.
It's not like football cleats where if it's raining or if there's sleet, you switch to this version versus that version.
Yeah, totally. Not so much. And this is another being a small country thing. So the big countries have like two cargo vans. They'll have like each athlete will have like three or four pair of skis. None of them will worry. None of them will even have to like think about it. They'll have techs doing everything, where I wax my own skis every jump. like there's just, there is a little bit of a difference there. And I kind of like it. Like, I love wax meskis. I try and never complain about being a small country. I mean, gives me something to do in the, like, the sometimes 45 minutes in between jumps at competitions, where you'd either be just sitting there overthinking things, or at least I'm like doing something, getting my skis ready. So I kind of like it.
All right. Where can people follow you? And are you updating like on social media frequently?
Yeah, I do. I post on Instagram. It's a good place, at Casey Larson. I got the blue check mark, which is sick. I don't know how that happened. And then actually I love Twitter, at KC16Larson. I like posting on that. But then, yeah, I got a Facebook page and stuff like that, but Instagram and Twitter are definitely where I, Twitter for the funny stuff and not super funny. I'm pretty lame actually. And then Instagram for the normal stuff, the pictures of me jumping and crap like that.
And of course, you've got a big fan base here in the Chicago area. I assume there are going to be watch parties, one way or another for you. And,
there's hope. And then the biggest shout out that I want to give is January 28th and 29th. I think those are the right dates. Norgi Ski Club in Fox River Grove, Illinois has a competition. And I think they named the slice of pizza you can buy at the concession stand after me. And then I think Kevin got the entire Jägermeister shot. So I'm kind of jealous of that. But those are super fun. I mean, kids huck themselves off that ski jump. So it's always crazy to watch. So it's definitely a good party.
I've been there. It is a lot of fun. And I've met your father before. And he's obviously very excited and excited for you and excited for Kevin and everything that's coming out of that ski club. And your sister's a jumper too, right? Who's a highly competitive jumper.
Yeah, she's getting there. We'll see her in probably 26.
Thank you, Casey. We'll be following him this weekend. Next week on Quest for Gold, we talk to figure skating duo Alexa Knierim and Brandon Frazier about making the Olympic team despite Frazier catching COVID at the U.S. Championships. I'm Ryan Burrow. We'll talk to you then right here on Quest for Gold.